Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. On today's show, how artificial intelligence is driving advances in healthcare. But first, in the 19th century, medical schools in Cincinnati and around Ohio needed cadavers to study, but had to turn to grave robbers to keep them supplied since the law didn't allow for body donation. Grave robbing was so common that inventors came up with some unusual ways to thwart the crime, things like the coffin torpedo. Here to discuss Ohio's history of grave robbing and the unusual tactics for protecting the dead are University of Cincinnati head archivist Kevin Grace and freelance writer Lucy Tiven. You can be part of the conversation, 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Lucy and Kevin, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be here again.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Kevin, start off by telling us, how big a problem was this? How rampant was this in Cincinnati during the 1800s?
Well, I guess the definition of it as a problem depends on which side you're on. But given that there were several medical schools in Cincinnati in the 19th century and that we were a river city of transients and immigrants, it was sort of a natural fit that this became a center of sorts for body snatching. And the thing is, if medical schools need cadavers and no law allows for them to be given to the medical schools, then you resort to illegal means. And so body snatchers had a nice little cottage industry here where they would take freshly buried or freshly dead bodies and deliver them to the medical schools under cover of night and get their money. Get their pay.
So how did Ohio as a whole compare to other places around the country? Was it especially bad in Ohio?
I don't know that it was especially bad, except at that time, most of the medical schools were in the eastern part of the country. And Ohio was probably no worse than others. Good as any, better than some.
But yeah. I would just jump in and say I would think that while, I don't know, Ohio wouldn't necessarily have it be more of a problem than, you know, compared to kind of other states that had medical schools, there were higher profile cases that emerged in Ohio, so there was sort of a bit more fervor around the issue there, you know, and that which sort of feeds into the Harrison case, which I suppose we'll talk about a little later.
The so-called Harrison horror. We can go ahead and bring that up right now, Lucy. What was that that story?
Well, I guess there was sort of this high watermark in 1878 of where there were at least 12 body snatching scandals reported, not just in Ohio, but across the country. Among those was Ohio Congressman John Scott Harrison, who his father would also go on to, you know, become United States President. And actually, it was quite interesting because they sort of did everything right in terms of trying to prevent this from happening. The sons had, you know, they paid a watchman to guard the grave, and they had, there was, you know, was cemented over the casket, and you know, reinforced with stone. But ultimately, the watchman turned out to be, he was paid off, and the body ended up in a chute at a local medical college, hanging from a rope.
She's right. It was a shaft at the Ohio Medical College, which was the predecessor of the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine. And as Lucy said, this was a case that made national news because of who the guy was, the son of one president, the father of another. And it started a lot of consternation around the country, along with the other cases that Lucy mentioned.
And the son.
Yeah, and it really led, I think, sort of bourgeois society to see this as something that could really happen to anyone, as opposed to, you know, previously people sort of had the idea that it was, you know, mostly the bodies of indigent poor, that this mostly happened to, which overwhelmingly, from at least what the research that I did, was the case. But there were a couple of cases, including this one, that received a lot of attention, you know, because they were people who were rich and were from nice, you know, nice families and or were involved in politics or, you know, business. And that really shook the sort of bourgeois class that was emerging.
The Harrison family, obviously a well-to-do family, Kevin, and were they the typical targets, though, for grave robbing? Who was the typical target?
Well, it's as Lucy said, the typical ones were indigents, transients, bodies that were not claimed by anyone, maybe in Potter's Field. But the thing is, when you needed a supply of bodies, you went anywhere and got them wherever you can. And, of course, the big figure in Cincinnati history was William Cunningham, who was an expert at resurrecting these bodies and selling them to the various schools. And I think I told you earlier, too, when we were chatting, that when Cunningham died, his wife actually sold his body to a medical school. So, Lucy's right in that it typically were people who would not be terribly missed, or they were people who could not protect their loved ones after they were put in the grave.
Were the medical schools apologetic about this, Kevin?
Gosh, I don't know if I'd call them apologetic. They knew what their need was, and they knew they were doing something illegal. But it was a case of where we need to do this if you want to advance medical knowledge at this time. This is what's going to happen. So I don't know that they were apologetic. I think it was more or less they tried to keep everything under wraps because it was illegal.
Yeah, Lucy.
They sort of also had their kind of own culture, that there was almost this sort of fraternity quality and that you see in some of the medical colleges, that there it was almost sort of a rite of initiation to some of the young medical students to have. Some of them did go out and steal their own bodies, and to be in the dissecting room and be doing the cutting themselves. There was a lot of pride in it, and it's a sense that was sort of what granted medicine sort of scientific legitimacy. But obviously, they were all, you know, also conscientious of the, you know, moral outcry surrounding that. So they certainly weren't, you know, always, you know, trumpeting it, you know, in the streets that that's what they were doing. Though there was, I believe, one school in Ohio that publicly sort of, you know, promoted that that's what, you know, it was being set up to do. And then there was a riot there very shortly after, and it was shut down, I believe.
Hmm.
Yeah, the thing is, Lucy has pointed this out in her article, but there was a reverence for bodies. I mean, one of our big social attributes, I guess, if you want to call it that, is that we as a society are very demonstrative against the desecration of bodies. And in the 19th century, that was certainly the case when you were hauling up someone's body for anatomical studies. So, you know, as Lucy points out, there is an outcry when this becomes known.
A lot of us, Kevin, have this picture of a grave robber with a shovel and a lantern out in the middle of the night digging up bodies. Is that an accurate picture of what these guys were doing?
Not really. Certainly not the lantern. They're not going to call attention to themselves to any watchmen. But, yeah, we have this notion that they dug up a grave, hauled up the casket, and opened it. But what they typically did when they had to go down in there was to dig at the head of the grave, smash through the casket, loop a rope around the head and shoulders, and haul them up and sack them up and deliver them that night. So, no, they never actually dug up entire graves. It would be too time-consuming, too noisy. They had to do this as quickly as they could.
Lucy, do they sometimes work in teams, Lucy?
Yeah, they actually, I suppose, in one of the more, I guess, high-profile sort of attempted foiled grave robberies was in Mount Vernon, Ohio. Actually, it was very near where I went to college, funny enough. But was a kind of a three-man operation, and there was three of them went in there, and there was actually an explosive planted within the grave, just kind of a primitive wiring explosive, which ended up killing one of the body snatchers and breaking the leg of the second resurrection man, and then the third man supposedly hoisted him away in a sleigh, Presumably, that's where what they attempted were going to transport the body with. But things, you know, it was a different body than they, you know.
One's as good as another.
And Lucy, is that explosive device you're talking about? Is that one of the so-called coffin torpedoes?
It's referred to as a coffin torpedo. From what anthropologists and archaeologists that I've spoken to, it's more likely than a sort of patented grave-specific device to just be kind of general explosives that were planted around the graves. The thing about coffin torpedoes is, as interesting as they are, and there really are these fascinating patents for them, they just really didn't. There's no signs that they really caught on or kind of were recovered archaeologically in any sense. They were not really, you know, a marketing success by any means. But there definitely were cases of, you know, sort of things like that where, you know, explosives were planted in, you know, around a grave, or, you know, there was some sort of wiring that was, you know, done a little bit ad hoc. But the two sort of main patents for the coffin torpedoes weren't something that we really ever saw commercially manufactured successfully.
We will continue our conversation. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and here to discuss Ohio's history of grave robbing and the unusual tactics for protecting the dead are University of Cincinnati head archivist Kevin Grace and freelance writer Lucy Tiven. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. So, Lucy, you say not too many of these coffin torpedoes were deployed, but did they serve as a pretty good deterrent? Is there any evidence that they made the grave robbers think twice about what they were doing?
I mean, at that point, I guess you're sort of looking, you know, you're kind of looking into conjecture, because there's not a ton of sort of, you know, recorded, you know, evidence of, you know, these people sort of telling their stories. Within the medical community, you see a little bit of that as other forms of medicine kind of take center stage, and the anatomists become more of the school historians. They can sort of tell the stories of the grave robberies and embellish a bit. But in general, you know, people are doing this pretty secretly. So you don't, when you end up seeing it, it's more kind of alongside the proliferation of yellow journalism, and there's sort of a lot of gossipy newspaper articles, you know, about, you know, such and such, you know, aristocrat's grave is loaded with, you know, powerful torpedoes, so no one dare, you know, intrude, and that sort of thing. Or you see things like, you know, small explosions, you know, that were, you know, grave robberies gone awry.
Yeah, was there a way to thwart that, thwart the coffin torpedo?
Not to my knowledge. A lot of them, you know, they were, you know, relatively kind of, you know, rudimentary technology. They basically used Civil War type explosives, and there, you know, there were a couple of different kinds. But at least from what I've seen, most of the explosives that actually were detonated, you know, were not these, you know, instruments that were sort of, you know, shotgun secured inside the coffin lid, or, you know, these sort of gadgets and shells buried. They were more just general explosives that were planted around the graves.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if maybe they took a vote and they said, it's your turn to dig the body up. You go do it this time. We'll watch.
Yeah, I mean, I think in general what sort of led to the sort of decline in this sort of, you know, body thievery and this just sort of illicit trade surrounding it. It was less about these technological innovations, if you could even call them that. I think that's a little flattering.
Yeah.
But, it was more the you know, series of anatomy laws that were passed, you know, in response to medical sort of rise of medical schools and institutions that gave them bodies that were unclaimed. And that was sort of, I believe Ohio's was passed in 1879. But by 1913, pretty much every state that had a medical school, there was some sort of law that granted them access to, you know, bodies of the of either, you know, criminals or of the unclaimed bodies of the poor, so on.
And Kevin, by the time the law was passed, was the practice of body snatching, was that already starting to decline somewhat anyway?
It was a little bit because they were getting away from gross anatomy studies, which required, you know, fresh cadavers, and getting into more refined, medical education. I mean, you still need bodies. That's not going to go away, but you don't need as many, and the number of medical schools was declining in Cincinnati as some went out of business, some merged with the others, some morphed into the UC College of Medicine. So there wasn't as great a need. Plus, as Lucy pointed out, the anatomy laws that were passed did allow medical schools to legitimately obtain bodies. In Ohio, the law actually said tramps. You know, if there were tramps who died, and they meant, you know, transients or itinerants or unclaimed bodies, then the law the medical schools, rather, could legitimately obtain these bodies.
Right. And to add to Kevin, I would also say that there's sort of, you see a little bit of improved refrigeration technology, too, at the kind of turn of the century, so that there was less of a need to, you know, really get something that was fresh from the grave, because that was part of what, you know, why this was sort of happened the way it did, was that there was a very short time period in which you needed to get a body that was fresh.
Lucy, I was just wondering about the coffin torpedoes. Is there a possibility that any of these might still be buried under an old gravesite somewhere?
I think in terms of, you know, anything's possible. It's really not, none of them have been recovered archaeologically, at least, you know, according to, you know, various archaeologists and anthropologists that I spoke to. So, you know, it's possible that somewhere out there, there's, you know, a perhaps, you know, now defunct torpedo, or maybe it still works and it'll, you know, fire out a lethal blast. And
oh no!
Yeah.
Were there any cases of people getting hurt accidentally by these things?
Not to what I've seen. It was all pretty much people that were, you know, engaged in, I guess you could say, this sort of foul play.
So, what were some of the other methods that people were using at the time to protect the deceased?
Well, there were cages put over the graves, iron cages that were locked down. That was one way. Having somebody stationed there, paying a guard for a few days until the body putrefied enough to be useless. In the case of Spring Grove Cemetery here, they actually constructed a building with cedar planks in it on which they could lay bodies and they could lock the door and all that. But that was also used in the case of wintertime deaths, where they would have to wait until spring to bury the person through the frozen ground. So those were two ways, the cages and, of course, the guards, and then a separate storehouse. Lucy probably knows some others as well.
Yeah, let's see. There were some, sort of sealed burials and sealed shipping crates, and some other kind of different kinds of cask. If you look into the kind of casket catalogs, there's different kinds of locking mechanisms, and, you know, cast iron coffins. And then in Britain, you see more of these sort of, now the name of them sort of escapes me, but these sort of cage-like structures. Over graves that were a bit more popular there, they have sort of their own story of grave robbery, and I didn't dig into that as much. And every state really has its own story.
Good point.
Yeah, no pun intended. I believe Mort Safe, perhaps, is what they were called. But all of those things really, you know, they have been recovered archaeologically. People did use them.
Yeah, I know when I took my students to Scotland a couple of years ago, we were in the Greyfriars Churchyard there, and there were some of these metal cages over the graves. And the students were real curious what they were for. And, of course, they keep the bodies in, but they let the ghosts out, and that's more or less what they were concerned with.
Kevin, not to justify grave robbing, not to say that it was right, but how much was learned by, and I'm sure Lucy can comment on this too, how much was learned by having these bodies versus if they weren't available?
I think it was essential. We have moral and legal and ethical objections to such a thing, but I don't believe that medical knowledge would have been advanced or as quickly advanced as it was in the 19th century and the 18th century as well, if we didn't have the bodies to dissect. So it was a terrible but necessary industry.
Absolutely. I would absolutely agree with that.
Lucy, it seems strange that the law didn't allow for body donation at the time. I find that kind of hard to believe.
Yeah, I think a lot of that just kind of has to do with the way that a Victorian society really conceived of death and the body, and that there was, this sort of idea of a beautiful death, and that if people really had, any money at all, they really would, usually spend a good deal of it on a funeral. There was a lot of there was great valuation in that, and I you can sort of see that in the moral outcry surrounding, these resurrection men.
When did the first donation law go into effect? Early 1900s?
No, I think it actually, in terms of donation, I really don't know. In terms of being able to legally get a body, if it was a transient or whatever, Lucy mentioned the 1879 law, and then it was refined in Ohio in 1881. But these were all state laws. There were no federal laws involved with this. So it varies from state to state when these went into effect.
Bob joins us now. Hi, Bob.
Hello.
Go right ahead.
Maybe 20, 25 years ago, I read a book, and the title of the book, I believe, was The Resurrectionist. And it appeared to have been put together as a compilation of newspaper articles about body digging in southwestern Ohio. And I was wondering if anybody knew of this book, or I've been looking for a copy of it, and I cannot find it.
Go to bookfinder.com on the internet.
I've looked everywhere I could on Google.
I don't know. The Ohio Historical Society issued a wonderful journal for many years, and they had articles of that type, including body snatching. And then there was a woman a number of years ago through McFarland Publishing in North Carolina who published a wonderful little book on body snatching that included a great deal of Ohio material. But as far as sort of an anthology or compilation of newspaper articles, I'm afraid I don't know of that one.
Well, it was really written kind of like a novel, but I could tell it was written from, had been researched from newspaper articles, and it focused on a gang of grave robbers in southwestern Ohio and Indiana. Talked a lot about Cincinnati.
Bob, thank you for the call. Lucy, did you have any thoughts on that one?
Oh, I mean, I would just say it's not something that I'm familiar with. I know that when I was doing my research, there were some materials that I was interested in that were only available in person at certain Ohio libraries that were, sort of put together, by archivists. And, so that might be something to look into. But that particular work, it sounds very interesting, but it's not something I've come across.
And Kevin, there is a statue in Spring Grove Cemetery I'd like you to tell us about. It's the Johnny Appleseed statue. That's dedicated to some extent to people who donated their bodies, right?
No. Okay. The Johnny Appleseed statue is a memorial to John Chapman, who went through the Ohio, Indiana area advocating the building of orchards. However, there is a monument as you go in Spring Grove that is dedicated to the people who donated their bodies to science. And that's probably the
that's
one you're
the one
thinking,
I'm thinking of. Yeah,
that's as you go to the right, as you come in the cemetery. It's a fairly modern monument that was put out by the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine, and it honors those who gave their bodies for science when they died.
Lucy and Kevin, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, and thank you, Kevin, for joining me. It's fascinating to hear about your research as well.
Yeah, we got excited by your piece that you wrote about it. So it's very interesting.
University of Cincinnati head archivist Kevin Grace and freelance writer Lucy Tiven. Coming up, we'll hear about a local effort to speed up the use of artificial intelligence to improve healthcare. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.